Welcome to Ron Paul and Charles Goyette, the weekly podcast. Whose life is it anyway? Well, if you have to ask, you're at odds with the likes of John McCain and Robert Reich and Charlie Rangel, all of whom think that the state should be entitled to commandeer the lives of young people for its own purposes, whether that is taking bullets in the occupation of foreign lands or merely emptying bedpans at home. The draft ended with the hugely unpopular Vietnam War, but the young are still required to register with Selective Service, and Dr. Paul, statist politicians are always eager to enforce their prior claims on the lives and affairs of the young people, and they seem to be especially fond of free riding on the labor of 18 to 25-year-olds.
Well, there's no doubt about it, but that's been history's case. Old people start the wars, and they make the young people fight the wars. But I've always found it fascinating about the registration, especially in this modern age when everybody knows where everybody else is. But in 1979, it was to reinstate registration under Jimmy Carter because of the invasion by the Soviets, into Afghanistan at the time. And, we had a couple votes. The first vote in a coalition with some of the conservative libertarian Republicans, which were few, and some progressive Democrats, we were able to defeat it. But later on, they got this established. But I always thought, why are they putting us through this registration? Because if you don't register, they know you haven't registered. They know everything about everybody. And in the age of NSA, why do they make kids, march off and fill out a piece of paper? And my theory on that is just to make sure they know who owns them. In case we need you, we're going to call you up. So it's a very, very bad policy. It, to me, is involuntary servitude, which used to be called slavery. And this is in a sense of ownership of the literal body. That is, that they can pick up some individual and force them into a war that they don't want to fight and risk their lives or do service work that they don't want to do. And, of course, it's slave labor prices. You don't really get paid the wage. And that's part of the reason for the draft is, no matter how much money they think they have and they can tax and they can do all these other things in print money, they still know there's a limit. So they want cheap labor and the draft is cheap labor. So I think one of the worst consequences of this is that we get involved in too many wars. Certainly we remember the Korean War and the Vietnam War we fought with draft, as well as World War I and World War II. And under Lincoln in the Civil War when it was first introduced. So it's been around a long time, but true believers in liberty totally reject the notion that a government can force young people into fighting wars that they don't endorse or any war whatsoever. But very close to this effort to explain and make it very emphatic who owns whom, and that is the government supposedly owns us and they can draft us and use it. But what about the economic slavery that's involved? I think the personal income tax is very close to this because, and conservatives are very bad on this. They pretend they're conservatives and limited government people, but they have drifted into accepting the liberal principle that the government owns all the wealth and you're permitted to keep a certain percentage. And this is why those individuals back when the income tax was introduced were strongly opposed to it, because on principle, even if you only pay 1%, if only a few people pay it to start off with, the assumption is that the government has authority over the fruits of your labor, and they will dictate whether you can keep 99% or whether you can keep 50% or 20%. And this is economic slavery, and very closely aligned with this, and it's aligned with war, too, is that there's never enough money for war. Buying war bonds never does the trick. Governments always resort to inflation, which is a tax, which is a personal tax, and it's based on the immorality of government authoritarianism, just like the draft is. That is, that the purpose of the central bank is to deliberately devalue the currency. Our Federal Reserve now is just all over themselves because they can't get the dollar, according to government statistics, to devalue fast enough. And so if you take those measures, which is taxation on the individual, whether it's direct income tax or the inflation tax, or whether it's the threat of being drafted into service, it's all very, very serious. So I was delighted the other day. I don't know if you saw this, Charles, where it was in Western Ukraine. Hundreds of young Ukrainians were going to their federal building to say, hey, look, you said we'd go in for 12 months and you're keeping us for 18 months. And it sort of reminds us of what happened in Iraq. You know, they kept our soldiers there a lot longer, and these were volunteers, and they got pretty fed up with it. So I think that is the answer when the young people rebel and say no more. And that, of course, is my goal, is to get people to realize you cannot depend on governments. They're the culprits who start the wars and then undermine our liberties. First the wars, and then there's this undermining of liberty. And all we have to do is look at the past history of 10 years of what's happened since 9/11, all the wars going on, and just look at the tremendous attack on our civil liberties at home.
I was myself, Dr. Paul, a victim of the Vietnam War era draft. In fact, enlisted under threat of imminent draft. But I used to wonder at the time how it was that status judges could find the most incredible things in the Reconstruction Amendments, in the Civil War Amendments, like the 13th Amendment. They could find the most incredible ways to expand the reach and authority and the power of the central state in those amendments, but they could not discover the plain language of the 13th that said, no involuntary servitude shall exist in the United States.
You'd wonder where they're coming from. I mean, I guess it's one thing is they don't worry about being inconsistent. And besides, you know, they have ultimate goals, which is not liberty. And if they can manipulate things, that's generally, I think, the case that so many people I ran into in Washington. Everything is manipulated to what their personal goals are. Use the government when you want to, or you think the government can help you reach those goals and represent the special interests. This has been going on, of course, for a long time. So inconsistency is not exactly welcome in Washington. Matter of fact, they sort of abhor it because it's sort of, without saying a word, it's sort of pointing their finger at them. Why do you do it? Why do you say one thing and do something else? This is why, especially in the early years when I went to Washington, I didn't get grief from the liberals. Matter of fact, if it was a principal liberal, they generally recognized it and had a little respect for me sticking to my guns. But the biggest criticism came from the conservatives, because if they were all voting wrongly on a bill and I was voting the other way, and if for whatever reason somebody would think, well, maybe he's voting the wrong way, they just couldn't stand that. There was a time, you know, I know you remember, I'd on occasion vote by myself on a lot of things. And they'd come and beg and plead, don't do it, don't do it. And I says, what difference does it make? I said, I'm the only one. But there was a difference because they all knew they were going along to get along. And unfortunately, this is what's happening today, whether it's the use of the military overseas, fighting Ebola in Africa, worrying about what's going on in Ukraine and NSA here at home. Whatever seems to be politically correct, go along with it, and I'll get to stay in office.
One of the arguments for the draft has always been the threat to our homeland, to people need to be impressed into service to defend us. But it strikes me as peculiar as well that presupposes that the people of the United States of America would not be willing to defend their homeland if, in fact, there was a threat of a real war or an invasion, if the foreign hordes were landing in the beaches of New Jersey or Santa Monica, that the American people would be uninterested in preserving the American way of life.
I don't doubt for a minute that it would rally the troops, and it would rally everybody, all ages and all sexes, because I think they would do something. But there was a story just recently about the war going on, Nubani, in Afghanistan. And they're about to be run over, but the Kurds are rallying. And they said that maybe half of the people fighting there are women, and they're doing it. And I think that is so different, you know, fighting for their homeland, their hometown, and for their freedom, versus sometimes some people might take this in a wrong way, but sometimes we have, you know, the feminist movement in this country that women have to act like men, you know, enjoined, well, I got to be in battle. I got to be treated equally. I have to be drafted, and I want to shoot too, and I want to fly jets and drop bombs on people. And I think, well, that isn't what I'm thinking about, but I have no qualms and no disagreement with women who are willing to defend their homeland. And you're absolutely right. You mentioned New Jersey, but I was thinking about what happened if it was 10,000 people had organized in Western Canada, and they were doing it secretly. And then all of a sudden they started moving down through the Dakotas and into Wyoming or something. Do you think that they would be met with resistance? You know, and that really raises the question a little bit about what's going on in Syria and Iraq, because I think they have to have tremendous support from the local people there for them to get away with this. And they're just picking between, you know, what they see as two evils, us being over there occupying, telling what to do, or another group coming in and saying, hey, let's get rid of the foreigners.
Well, it's certainly distressing to see the subject of a national draft or national service pop back up, and it does so again and again. Thank you, Dr. Paul. Another informative conversation and podcast. And I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and especially for telling their friends about our weekly podcast. I'm Charles Guillet.